What I want to do today is, just let me get this up, set up as a slideshow, is just begin by asking how many people here use Facebook at all? How many people use Twitter? All right, and of those who don't use Twitter, are you fairly familiar with what it is? And okay, all right, fantastic. I just want to start off with a little bit of a riff off the brief for today. We hear a lot of different things about the impact of Twitter and Facebook, but just what is their role within the rapidly evolving mediascape? And today we're going to look at this question through the discussion of how we've built audiences using social media through Upstart, which is a site that we set up a couple of years ago as really a teaching and learning exercise within journalism. And really the origins of Upstart are pretty straightforward. We realised that a lot of our final year students in journalism didn't have a lot of publication experience. And when I thought back to my time at Melbourne Uni when writing for the local student newspaper was a big thing, and there was just the beginnings of community radio, I kind of felt in some ways that the traditional media here had become a lot harder to get into. And the week after I started at La Trobe, the student radio station shut down here. So it just occurred to me that unless we were quite proactive within our program, it was possible that at a time when it was more and more important for students to come out of university with publication track records, that we were going to end up with a lot of graduates who we taught a lot of things to, but who hadn't had a lot of practice when it came to publishing and working together collaboratively to do a whole lot of things. And this included actually using social media to promote their own work. So my colleague Christopher Scanlon, who's on leave at the moment, otherwise would be here, he and I set this up a couple of years ago, and we had as our first editor the man sitting over there with the apple, Erdem, in the far end. I'll just point to him until he acknowledges that he's been spoken about publicly, who's now a colleague of in journalism, but Erdem was doing his final year of a law degree and a media degree at the time. And we just used the dodgy mechanism of setting up a reading subject and said, do you want to edit Upstart for the semester? And then really, that was the middle of 2009. If we fast forward to now, we're actually integrating Upstart into the curriculum in two ways that we didn't then. One is we've actually got a subject called Online Editing and Publishing that third year students and master students and honours students can take as an elective, and we've currently got 10 students enrolled in that. So that's a bigger staff than a lot of publications like Crikey, possibly even Business Spectator. And the other thing that we're doing is we're right from first year actually prescribing that assignments that students do in their normal subjects should be designed for Upstart. And we'll see a bit more of how that works later. All right, so I've said a bit about the rationale. I guess I like to call this a kind of studio rather than instructive form of teaching. So with our class for online editing and publishing is an editorial meeting where actually if I'm going to run a piece, I run it by the editor, who's one of the 10 people who are students enrolled in the class. And so what we've really tried to do through setting up Startup is create an authentic learning environment for students where they have to work collaboratively or it's not going to work at all. And they learn editorial skills, they sub each other's work, we send each other copious emails. And for the staff who are involved in it, which this semester is me and Erdem, we learn a lot from what they bring to the experience as well. Where we've got to, I think, in the first couple of years is Upstart is a brand that's recognised right around Australia. We've had a quarter of a million page views. We've had nearly 1,000 pieces published on the site. Our editors and contributors, apart from the Erdem in the room, that have gone on to get full-time journalism jobs, have included Tom Cowie, who's working at Crikey, Matt Deneef, who's at this new outfit called The Conversation, and a number of our other contributors and editors have gone very quickly from graduating into full-time work in the media. What we've tried to do with the site is not really brand it, and this is kind of part of what the seminar is about, as so much as a student publication, but as a site for emerging journalists. So it's got its own mission, and of course that overlaps with what happens to graduating journalism students, but it happens to be published at La Trobe. And there's a lot of this happening now at university and journalism schools, and there's even a new term I noticed this week called puppy watchers or watch puppies or something like that, is a new generic term for students who are working in projects which end up being publications for other, investigative publications for other organisations. So we're not really working quite like that at the moment, but we are attempting through the kinds of things we do to be a resource for the industry in a number of ways. The social media part of it is that everything that we post is on the site is promoted through both our Facebook and Twitter page, and the student editors are responsible for posting the links and material. So people have got to learn how to use Twitter and the Facebook page, and this is how we've built our audience. And we've got more than 1,900 followers on Twitter at the moment and 580 on Facebook, but overall Facebook drives a bit more traffic, and we'll look a bit at why that might be so a bit later. But what that means when it comes to Twitter, we'll have a look at the Twitter site in a moment, but every time we put up a link to one of our articles on Twitter, in theory, if they're watching their computers, there's 1,900 people who are the audience for that. All right, so of course we're not alone in doing this. There's about 500 million Facebook users, about 200 million Twitter users sending about 65 million tweets a day. That's not each, but it sometimes feels like it. According to a survey a couple of years ago, and this was picked up a lot at the time, 40% of tweets are pointless babble, and only about 9% of them have pass along value. And I guess what we're doing when we're posting links to our pieces is we're trying to pass along or promote what we're doing. And then if someone else sees it and they want to pass it along, that obviously automatically, sometimes exponentially, but someone like Lee Sales broadens the reach and audience through Twitter. A lot of people say that just proves Twitter's a lot of rubbish, but I think if we applied that same principle to analysing phone calls in the 1930s, or even earlier than that, we would have found the same thing. But the point is that the phone became essential for a whole lot of different parts of everyday life. And I think we've seen some very interesting discussions, obviously, in the wake of events in the Middle East and elsewhere in the last few months about and Japan, about what Twitter can do and how it operates in a time of stress or revolution. And so its potential perhaps isn't quite as well understood because it's still only 5 years old and evolving. Some of the claims made about it are ludicrous, that it can bring democracy to the world on its own, but obviously it's a factor in how social movements and responses to disasters play out. And it's also because of the fact that people are tweeting so much about what's happening in news, if you can focus your Twitter feed, you can turn it into something that's a lot more revved up than a traditional wire feed. And that's why stations like 3AW, I believe, no longer even subscribe to a wire service. They've just got the Twitter feed on all the time. So I think also Twitter is an art form. It's the kind of haiku of our age, and you can get yourself into a lot of trouble because the conversational style of Twitter, where everything's got to be done in 140 characters, and the way that people talk to each other can seem very casual. But as we've seen in a number of cases I won't go into today, that what happens if you say something slanderous or derogatory or distressing about someone else is it can turn into a news story or even worse. There's a piece that was written about today's seminar that went up on Upstart. And I just thought what we do here is have a look at how the social media specifically works for something like this. So this went up on the site. And then this is our Twitter page. And so I guess what I want to do here is just illustrate the art of the tweet in something as mundane as a mention of the fact that I'm talking to you now. That what's going on in that tweet there? Join at Elzine at Latrobe on Thursday as he discusses the role of hashtag social media in building the at Upstart magazine brand. And then if you click on the link that's there, that'll take you to the page we've just seen. What's going on there? Well, for those who aren't familiar with how it works, at Elzine means if you click that on, you'll go to my Twitter page. At Latrobe, you'll go to the Latrobe University page. So that means that people who are following Latrobe or following the hashtag of social media or following my name will automatically get that in their feeds. So every time that you strategically embed something like an at symbol or a hashtag, the social media one's hilarious because as soon as we put the social media one up, we started noticing we were being retweeted by Hungarian social media organizations and, you know, Brazilian SEO agencies and all this sort of stuff. So some people just see social media and they'll retweet it. And I can't understand why we don't have Hungarians already here today. Obviously, it wasn't convincing enough when they read the content. But what you have there, I think, is a strategically designed tweet. And then you can see the other tweets that preceded it underneath. On the right-hand side, what it tells you up there is, because we're on the Upstart page and anyone can access this, it's not like Facebook, is that we're following 2,042 other Twitter pages. We're being followed by 1,892, and we're listed in 266 or whatever it is. And the lists that we've created there are ways that we create filters to make Twitter work in different ways. Obviously, if you've got tweets pouring in from a couple of thousand different people, it is going to be a complete random mishmash. But in a sense, we can, by clicking on any of these links, and I'll show you this a bit later on, we can see what the Upstart team are tweeting, what Latrobe graduates are tweeting that they're following from journalism school feeds. We can turn it into a newswire. We can see what Australian journalists are saying to each other. So that's just an example of how that works. And Upstart magazine is listed in a couple hundred of these sort of lists right around the web.
Sorry, why isn't it at social media? What is the purpose of
the hashtags? Okay, the difference between hashtags and... hashtags are for topics. So how many people here have ever watched Q&A and seen the tweets going underneath? So what happens is Q&A says if you use the hashtag of Quanda, it then doesn't go to a particular Twitter page, but everyone who uses the hashtag of Quanda that feed will go like crazy on your computer. And I'll jump out of this at the end and show and just illustrate a couple of these points and back up. But what you'll get usually with a hashtag is a much broader array, and hashtags tend to be used for topics more than for individual sites. Yeah. So if we're talking about what we've got underneath BJ Waterworth is Ben Waterworth, hashtag cricket, so that any story on cricket with a hashtag of cricket will appear in the same feed if you click that on. All right, so it's obviously really important when you're designing tweets to optimize your audience to think about how you're going to use these things. Our Facebook page, so you can see again, really, it's just a reversioning of the same tweet underneath about Laurie Zine will talk about social media strategy. Above, do you have an opinion about the current revolutions in the Middle East? So with Facebook, where you've got more than 140 characters, you've got the link to the piece, and we try to make the discussion a bit more invitational and to try and treat it as a different format to Twitter. You can see that 581 people like this means that's our audience there. And of course, people can like, comment and share. And even though it's smaller than our Twitter audience, it's a lot more active. And overall, we get more hits from Facebook, especially because a lot of our students are much more active on Facebook, and if they share a story there, it really spreads like wildfire and quite often can build up a couple of hundred hits very quickly. Any questions just about that that page there. I'm sure most of you are familiar with the with this. Just to give you a bit of a sense of some of the tweets, just to give you a sense of how we reach audiences this way, I've just favourited that one at the top because they're friends of mine in the UK. But the other day we ran a piece with an interview with the editor of Cosmopolitan magazine, and Jane Hutchin noticed it and sent a note to Penny, who was one of our upstart writers and editors, and sending her a note congratulating her. So it gives you a sense when articles start to get shared around a bit, people who are not connected directly to our immediate network start to find out about them. And another classic case, the ABC managing director, Mark Scott, saw a piece written by our former editor, Megan Lodwick, where she'd quoted Mark Twain, and he just decided to tweet back to us, an expert is an ordinary fellow from another town, I like it, thanks Megan, and put that up. So then, of course, with Mark Scott being a very avid Twitter user, a lot of people started retweeting that as well. And when I caught up, saw Mark Scott at a function a couple of weeks later, I said, you know, Megan was very chuffed about that. And he said, you know, she seemed quite startled. And they clearly had an ongoing discussion about that. But I think what that demonstrates really clearly to us and to students who are working on Upstart is that you're not necessarily just going to be talking to other students. If you do a piece, you never know who's going to be out there reading it. And people build up real audiences through the use of the site.
Laura, can I just stop? He tweets that message to Megan, but then he tweets at Laurie's Iron as well, does he? Or is that...
What he's done is, I think he found I had linked to it. And so he went and read the story and he just put it there acknowledging that he found it from me. Because he follows me on... We follow each other on Twitter and that's
right.
Probably how he found it.
Right.
But he now follows Upstart as well.
Yeah. Sorry, I have to go early because it seems very interesting.
That's all right. I'll give you a private rendition later on.
You might need it.
All right, David.
Thanks.
Branding Ben. We've got a third year student who just turned 20. He's written 100 articles for Upstart. He's someone who was in on the ground floor. And I just want to show you how today he found out he just got a paid job with Raw, with the Raw, the sport website. And because he's so prolific, it looks quite impressive when I show you how we do this. But this is the principle about how students who come through and write for Upstart while they're at university end up with a URL there, which is their portable portfolio, and it goes with them wherever they go. So if you click on that link there, what you'll get is a list of his most recent articles that we won't show you the whole 100 now. And then if you just put Ben Waterworth's name into Google, he's a very active tweeter, you'll straight away get what he's written on Upstart recently, what he's got on Twitter. So people who are active on both end up building up their own brand on Twitter, and Upstart itself, their own Upstart publications, end up becoming featured really highly in the results for any Google search. And I thought I'd taken this out, but I hadn't. But so what we do at the foot of every article is this. It requires a little bit of fiddling around, but every time anyone writes for us, that hyperlink under Ben Waterworth is what tags to him. And we obviously tag the Bachelor of Journalism program, and we put his Twitter address as well. And the tags that come in the article mean that people searching those terms can find by clicking on anything that we've written on any of those particular items. All right. But just showing you a little bit of how some of the mechanics of it work, just look at a couple of issues about using social media to promote journalism. One of the more interesting and controversial areas where we've seen journalism collide with new media is search engine optimization. Are people here generally familiar with that term, SEO or search engine optimization, where putting keywords in titles and in articles will lead to will possibly lead to it's really to kind of wake up the algorithms in Google that will mean that sites will get more hits. So I tried it out gratuitously once by putting, you know, Justin Bieber in an article, and I kind of wrote about the fact that I was doing this and seeing if, you know, if I got more hits as a result. Google now is meant to be smart enough a system to actually identify when that's happening. But we did have one article once from the current editor of a couple of years ago of Upstart, and she, and Avocados, Facebook and Testicles in the title of the piece, and that actually ended up being extremely widely read. So when you start using keywords like that, Google gets very excited. And what it means, though, in journalism is that topics that are popular are going to get more hits than those that are not. And if you just took an area like medical journalism, you know, one of the issues that comes up is that if you're a freelance journalist and you want to become widely known through what you do as a freelancer, it might be better off for you to pick the diseases that are ranking, you know, higher in search engines than the ones that aren't. And so there's a question as to whether there's a kind of dumbed down effect, probably an inappropriate metaphor in this case, but if it actually skews what people are writing about to the point that topics that aren't already in the public eye or aren't already sexy to a broad audience don't get written about. And I think we get a sense of that when we go to the tabloid online versions of our respectable broadsheets and see what kind of pieces they're running and how different they are from the pieces that are running in the paper, and then look at what are the most visited sites, and we can get a sense of there being obviously a tension between what draws in hits and what newspapers like to think that they're doing in for the public interest. So I think the other issues that emerge and have become very topical with social media and journalism are the control of revenue and the control of the audience. The control of revenue is really who pays for journalism when you can access so much of it through hyperlinking from one area to another. And that's such a big topic, I won't go into it now. With Upstart, it's not an issue because we haven't yet started charging users to come on board, and we never will. But I think the control of audience is a really interesting one, and it has ramifications for the whole of the media. And I just want to show you a couple of paragraphs from a report that came out a couple of weeks ago. It's the annual State of the Media report from the Project for Excellence in Journalism in the States. And what this summary of this document pointed to is one of the fundamental challenges to journalism that's come through in the last year is not the lack of audience or even lack of new revenue experiments, but it's that in the digital realm, the news industry is no longer actually in control of its future. News organisations, old and new, still produce most of the content audiences consume, but each technological advance has added a new layer of complexity and a new set of players in connecting the content to consumers and advertisers. And in the digital space, the organisations that produce the news increasingly rely on independent networks to sell their ads, and they depend on aggregators like Google and social networks like Facebook to bring them a substantial portion of their audience. So, what that really means is that if one of my favourite, you know, I love The New Yorker and I love The Economist, and I actually do subscribe to them both, I'm a paying customer, but there's a lot of material that you can find on Facebook and Twitter that, and a lot of its audience now has migrated to only finding what's happening in those sites by going to Facebook and Twitter. And obviously audience research, if you're running a media business, is incredibly important, but one of the issues being identified now is that media companies are starting to lose track of who their audience actually is. And the same report actually points out, if anything, the metrics of online news have become more confused, not less. Many believe that the economics of the web, and particularly online news, cannot really progress until the industry settles on how to measure audience. Now, there have always been issues about how to measure audience. We see it every time newspapers try to spruik that their readership's gone up, but it may not be that their sales have gone up. Certainly the TV ratings have always been controversial. But I think that when it comes to online traffic, there really is no consensus about what things mean. So I told you earlier on, we've had 250,000 page views. Now, that might sound impressive as a figure, but what it actually means is open to question, obviously. A quarter million compared to what? And I think that people want to know when we're looking, especially when you're looking at the relationship between eyeballs and advertising, how many millions of hits do you need to get in order to make a certain amount of money out of advertising? And there are no fixed points within this. So just from the end of that paragraph, in addition to confusion about what it means, it's almost impossible to get a full sense of consumer behaviour across sites, platforms and devices. So potential advertisers are at a loss about how to connect the dots. So although Upstart is not advertising, obviously when we look at our students who are going out to try to develop sometimes their own freelance businesses, it's still going to be very complicated for them if they're going to try and actually make money off the web from, you know, doing stuff on their blog. And I guess the point that underlines for us, and there are a whole lot of courses now springing up in the States tagged entrepreneurial journalism, is the journalists who once could be not only innumerate but also completely unaware of how economics worked, possibly including some economics correspondents, that are now in a situation where they actually have to be aware of how all of this stuff really works. But I think what we can say for journalists is the brand building for individuals really is important outside of how the whole advertising system works. By building a big profile on Twitter or Facebook, if you're a journalist, that is going to make you more noticed and more part of a general conversation and raise your profile. And social media sites like Facebook, we can see, are realising how to make the most of this. There's a new experiment, it's only been out a few days, Facebook for Journalists. Once again, I think it shows that social media platforms are becoming really central to the way journalism's evolving. And this really has only gone up, I think, in the last 4 or 5 days. So it's really new. To give you an idea of how we try to figure out what's happening with our site from our Google Analytics, this is really the stats from the first few months we were up and running. And I'm not an expert on how to interpret this, and I'm just guessing, but if you compare what we see there when it comes to referring sites, direct traffic, search engines, to what's happening now, we're seeing search engines have become much more important, from about 30% to about 50%. And I think my interpretation of that, and again, this could end up being a pointless and technical discussion, but what I think is when I look at where our hits are coming from, the fact that people know what Upstart is, that the brand has matured to a point where people will be turning up on search engine results, has meant that now we're actually getting about half our hits from search engines, which is great, and that way we're getting a lot of new people coming onto the site regularly. But on any given day, Facebook and Twitter are still likely to be the main referral sources for our hits. And so this is a pretty typical snapshot of what we get, taken, I think, yesterday afternoon, where we see that the links that brought people into the site, Facebook ahead of Twitter, and we had a specialist site connected to the town of Donald, because our editor wrote a piece, Welcome to Donald Duck Country, about a perspective from the town of Donald about the duck shooting season. So what we can see on any given day is just how important Facebook and Twitter are for bringing our audience in. If we don't post links to our articles, nothing much happens. I just want to finish up with perhaps a case study of where social media really enriched the whole experience for our students and for us of with a project that's still going, the 100 Articles Project. And this project is designed as a curriculum exercise with a publication outcome. And Sam mentioned before the Hottest 100. I guess I had an idea of transposing this to journalism and had an idea of what would happen if we tried to find 100 articles that every journalist should read that you could link to on the web. And to realise this project, I started with a group of students at the start of last year in our honours master's class, The Working Journalist, and set an assignment where everyone had to look at find 10 articles and write 200 words about each of the 10 of them, of articles that journalists should read about journalism. And so from that, we got to about 60 or 70, and with the class that we've got running at the moment, where we've just had the same assignment submitted, we're going to end up completing the list. Anyway, that gives you a bit of an idea, and I'll show you a couple of these pieces in a moment. But what we did was, and David's question before about using hashtags and the ats and referencing people's direct Twitter addresses, is that we included, when we tweeted articles about some authors who are still very active journalists. That's just the one of the examples of one of the 100 articles. So you can see the format up the top. You've got the article in question that has been written about, Can Media Get Beyond Reactive Responses to Tragedy? And you can see that that will link through to the piece in question. And then you've got Jared Strouch, one of our graduates last year, writing a piece about why he thinks this is an article that every journalist should read about journalism. But through Twitter, the authors of articles being reviewed became aware of the fact that we'd written about them and started retweeting the articles themselves. And in fact, one of these articles was called How Search Engine Optimization is Changing Journalism. And it's by a guy called Shane Richmond, who's a British journalist who's got more than 6,000 articles. And he started retweeting that piece. And so this started to become the whole 100 Articles project, started to develop a following all around the world. And other journalists, from a Dutch guy, got in touch and said he'd like to write one about his favourite article. And these people were just coming out of the blue. And we actually started getting international coverage for the project as a result. So here's a specialist site in the UK, journalism.co.uk, where we started getting, where they wrote a whole piece about how we embarked on this process. And I guess the point I want to make in showing you about the 100 articles here is really to illustrate that it's the way that we promoted it on social media that built the audience and the interest in it, and continues to be, I think, the most popular single project that we've done on the site. That's the Aegis write-up of it. Yeah, it's not restricted to either our students. Students from anywhere can submit, and journalists from anywhere can submit as well. Anyone can really write for it. So we don't have a policy of who can write and who can't. And so we get a whole range of contributions from people from a whole... We do have a lot of students from other universities writing for us, and some quite regularly. We also have contributions from people who may have never written anything before but are interested in writing something. And other journalists sometimes will write guest columns for us as well. Just to conclude and to maybe open up some discussion, my conclusions from the 2 years of Upstart is that online publishing is pointless without understanding the skills required to promote your work. The web is just one great big void unless you know what you're doing there. So as media companies lose controls over audiences, individual brands are definitely becoming more important. So all these changes that are going on, all this confusion about who's in charge of what audiences, is really a fragmentation of the old order. And so to me, that just strengthens the point that it's really critical that the graduates that we produce actually understand how to function in that environment. And that what I've noticed also is students who develop social media competencies, I suppose like social skills except for the web, actually produce better work because they understand they're writing for a real audience. Because that audience often, that example of whether it's Mark Scott or Shane Richmond, will read something if they're referred to and get back to them. And I think this has got implications not just for Upstart, but for our whole curriculum in journalism. We've actually begun to assess social media skills as early as first year. And the people who are currently working on Upstart, a lot of their day and is spent sending emails around trying to get the tweets right for the next morning. And we are really, really aware of the fact that this is something which isn't just a trivial thing, that it's really hard to write about an article that you've done in 20 or 30 words. And it's such a contrast to, I suppose, the environment I came into at La Trobe 5 years ago, where the final third year subject, the which had never been taught, but the handbook entry said 1 5,000 word article. And I guess what we've done in trying to develop both writing for Upstart and writing for social media is really try to get into the importance of writing short, direct material for an audience that you may not know but you want to attract. The other question that's raised, I guess, and this goes into, I suppose, some of my ideas about the broader role of journalism education within universities such as La Trobe, is whether some of the things that we're doing can play a role outside of the program when it comes to developing social media skills in other disciplines. The parallel, I guess, is we set up a subject last year in first year called The Interview and made it a faculty subject, not a journalism subject. And it's an interesting time because while you hear so much about how journalism as an industry, as a profession, is contracting, you've got all these journalism graduates, but there aren't that many jobs in newspapers, for instance. At the same time, I think the skills that traditionally journalists would often be quite precious about as being almost proprietorially so in some cases, are actually becoming important to a much broader range of not just art students, but students generally. And I guess you could argue, if we're looking at lifelong skills, that and more people are participating in media, that being able to do this is a core competency that a lot of us hope that, you know, kids who we send to uni are going to end up coming out knowing something about. Thanks for having me.